Welcome to Reframe, the podcast where we challenge the status quo. I'm your host, Helen Darby Dowman, and I'll be joined by expert researchers from Nottingham Trent University. Whether you're a curious mind or a critical thinker, listen as we unpack common beliefs and offer fresh perspective on the headlines that shape our world. In this episode, we're challenging the commonly held belief that Afghan women need saving, a narrative often perpetuated in the West. Joining me is Dr. Hind Al-Hanawi, a senior lecturer in criminology at NTU, whose research explores the interplay between Islamic values and perceptions of young women. With over a decade of experience in gender activism and significant contributions to law and policy reform, Dr. Al-Hanawi will help us explore why it's vital to recognise Afghan women's autonomy and amplify their voices. Hind, thanks so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. I'm looking forward for that kind of conversation. Thank you.
Could you start by telling us a bit about why do you think there's a common belief in the West that Afghan women need saving? And where does that perspective come from?
Okay, so that's historically, it came from colonialism. And the one who theorized it was Edward Said, who wrote the book Orientalism, and discussed in it how the West have seen the Orient as the feminine, as the weak, as the victim in need of saving. That went specifically in looking at women of the Orient in need of saving from their own men, seeing that the Orient is sexist, misogynist, patriarchal, so on and so forth, and looking at women in the Orient as victims, as subordinated, lacking agency, and so on. So this idea has come from the time of colonialism, but it came back to the surface again after 9/11, and of course the attack to Afghanistan, and the media started portraying the same idea. But then this was also used to justify these kind of invasions. So in order to be able to get the voter to vote for us to go and invade Iraq or Afghanistan, we needed to stand and say that we're saving the women. So if we remember Bush and Laura Bush saying that that first and foremost, we're doing that to save the women of Afghanistan. So the ideas came from there, and the media continued playing on that. We can remember the girl with the green eyes, the Afghan girl with the green eyes from National Geographic, and then going 20 years after, going back to Afghanistan, the journalist from National Geographic, and trying to find the girl with the green eyes and who she is now, and so on. Of course, I can talk about this, you know, forever, but it goes as far as that, as justifying attacks and justifying war on terror, and seeing the Eastern Orientalist man as the terrorist and the Eastern Orientalist woman as the victim of this man.
So how can we better recognise Afghan women's autonomy and let them define their own needs rather than seeing them as victims?
So I don't know if you know this author called Arundhati Roy. She's a winning author. She's amazing, and she said a very a quote that really touched me. She said, "You cannot bomb feminism into a country." So this is what the West are trying to do. They are trying to take these same ideas of feminism and trying to bomb it into the East and the Orient without understanding the actual context there. So I'm an atheist, but if we go back to Islam, Muhammad was a prophet who married a woman who's 20 years older than him. She was his boss. He was working for her. He was ignorant. She was educated. So when we talk about feminism and equality, it just looks different. And we need to start understanding that. We need to start to understand that Afghan women, not just Afghan women and Iraqi women and Syrian women, and all women, non-Western women, want other things. We think sometimes, oh, these women want to be subordinated. No, they don't want to be subordinated. But the idea of equality looks different. So, for example, from my own experience, I'd be in Egypt from where I come from, and I'm in a pub until 2 a.m., and then a nice guy would offer me to drive me home. And that because he feels like, you know, he needs to be chivalrous, not because I'm weaker. Here, my experience here, if somebody offered to drive me home at 2 a.m., they want something out of it. So, you know what I mean? It's just the idea of equality looks different. The idea of equality in the non-Western societies is somehow a man and a woman, you know, how can I say it? Not completing each other is not the word, but, you know, they don't have the same roles, and that's absolutely fine. That is not disrespectful for women. That is does not see women as less than men. And I'm not saying that there is equality over there. There's not equality over here. There's not even equality in Norway, you know, which is, you know, the most celebrated gender equality. So gender equality does not exist anywhere. It might be at different levels. Maybe in the West they have achieved better gender equality. But again, what kind of gender equality? What kind of feminism? To be able to understand that, we need to listen to these women. We need to give them this platform to say, this is what we want.
And so what are the common misconceptions about Afghan women that feed into the idea of them needing to be saved?
Homogenization. We're all the same. You know, I hear people telling me stuff like, oh, we've tried South African food. I am from North Africa, but for them, Africa is a small city. So everything non-Western is just homogenized, as if all women want the same thing. No, we just like the West. We you know, I'm sitting in front of two women, and I'm sure that these two women want different things. So it's the same there. So homogenization is a huge problem. Victimization, not seeing what women are actually doing, protesting, the activists, all the work that women, the non-Western women, are working and are struggling to achieve equality. We're not seeing that. We're not seeing the gains. We're only seeing the victimization. And cultural superiority, which is again brings us back to the idea of Orientalism and colonialism, and white supremacy, you know, the white need to save the non-white. So I think these three misconceptions, you know, just if you just if we just work on these, things might change.
And so then how is the media portrayal of this Afghan women sort of shaping how the West see it?
So the media are focusing on the war. The media are not focusing on anything. You never hear anything about Muslims unless it has to do with terrorism, radicalism. They're not portraying anything else other than that. So if you go, for example, to Tehran, I'm not going to say Cairo because Cairo is the, you know, most, you know, less radical than all these countries in the eyes of the West. But I would even say Tehran. You'll see all types of women. Have you heard about the woman who went out with her underwear to university? She was attacked by the guards because she was showing a bit of her hair. So instead of them even trying to tell her to cover her hair, they push it away. So she's like, she had enough. You know what? Okay, she took off her clothes and walked around the university in her underwear. My mum's friends, Iranian friends, are, you know, they're not veiled, they're atheists, they smoke cigarettes, they drink. So the idea, again, of homogenization is that this is the only thing that the media shows. And but because we know that the media and the power, the leadership, are very much related. So it's really hard for the media to portray something else because it's not in their interest to portray anything else. So if they portray a woman like me wearing a skirt that, by the way, this outfit is something that I wear in Cairo as well. It's not that my brother, you know, doesn't comment on it a bit and say, like, didn't you have any longer skirt to wear? But the fact is that the idea is that if the media portrayed a woman like me, atheist, you know, shaved head, short skirt, then how will they, how will the people in power convince people to vote for them to go and, you know, attack Afghanistan? They don't want to show you that side. If they show you that side, they won't be able to continue the so-called war on terror.
So tell me a little bit more about the alternative stories then that the media perhaps should be telling.
I mean, there are people, you know, people separately, you know, in the background trying to do that kind of work. So and I think even here in Nottingham Women's Centre, for example, when they're talking about the harassment laws and trying to put that as hate crime, they used storytelling. And they used storytelling from feminism. So it still comes from the idea of feminism, the importance of storytelling. But then it only applies to white people, you know, just like democracy. Democracy in the West only applies to white people. So, and storytelling only applies, and narratives only applies to white women. So no, we need to start to apply, you know, the idea of narrative theory and storytelling and the importance of finding, you know, these intricate stories that we will not be able to get in numbers. Now, I was just in a workshop with King's College but in Wales about analysing census data. They were looking at gender and gender disaggregated data. And then I'm a qualitative researcher, so this was really fascinating for me and very complicated as well. But, you know, just getting it bit by bit, and you realise that, oh, the numbers are not telling you even half the story. I'm not saying that the numbers are not important, but if we don't supplement that with the real stories, with stories, in-depth stories of Afghan women, let them speak for themselves, I think this is something that the media, and that is not very hard for the media, because there is an Afghani woman who was, or an Iranian woman, who was running the BBC Hour in Iran or Afghanistan. She wrote a book, and she had all these stories of women, and the stories included the strength and the weaknesses, not just one side of... No woman is just a victim. Anywhere in the world, you know, there is a strength. We need to build on that as well to be able to support her. You know, strength. If there are a few strong women, we need to support these few strong women, because they are the ones who will strengthen the rest of their society. Afghan women in the villages will not listen to you, Helen, you know.
No.
So they need to listen to one of them. And this is what we need to do. We need to support, you know, the activists in Afghanistan to tell us these stories.
So, Hind, just to kind of wrap it up. I mean, I know we could talk about this for a very long time. I'm fully appreciative of that. But if you could just like finish up by telling us, like, give us one insight you'd hope listeners would take away about the empowerment of Afghan women and the importance of understanding their own experiences.
So one of the important insights that I always talk about is the whole idea of empowerment. We maybe need to change our language a bit, because empowerment, again, implies that there is a superior person empowering, you know, empowering these victims. So there should be no power dynamics here. There should be us trying to create that flat platform for these women, you know, to find their voices. When they find their voices, they will be empowered. And then we can then ask them, how do you want us to help? You know, instead of just deciding for them how we should help them. And I think that that's not very hard. It just will take time, because stories take time. It's not like data, you know, some numbers, graph, here it is. No, stories take time. So just give it time, but open that platform. Even start with ourselves. Just, you know, listen to other people. Try to be open to other cultures, rather than just in December talking about Christmas only. Maybe ask other people, what else do you celebrate in this time of the year? What do you do? You know, how is your culture? Why is your culture that important, despite that, you know, your husband is beating you back home and he's still sticking to your culture? There has to be something. We need to understand this dynamic, because at the moment we don't understand it. And there's much of that in my book, so I hope people read it.
Thank you so much, Hinda. I mean, clearly, we're just scraping the surface of this subject, and I really appreciate you being able to do that and share that with our listeners. So thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
If you'd like to find out more about Hinda's work and research, please have a look in the episode description. You've been listening to the Reframe podcast by Nottingham Trent University. For all the latest news from the research community at NTU, follow us on LinkedIn at NTU Research, or sign up to our research newsletter by visiting ntu.ac.uk/research.